Hey everybody, welcome back to the Grey Malkin Lane Patreon channel. It is early November 2024. This is the first episode I am recording post-election. And it's been a hell of a week. We are gonna just join together and nerd out and have fun. But we have three queer guys recording the show right after this happened. So this will be fun. Weirdly, we get to talk about like a murder death guy today. So I don't know that we need to draw a parallel there, but it's been a crazy week. And we're gonna give ourselves permission to smile today. We're going to be talking all about the character Suvik Senyaka, who is an acolyte with death tentacles. This resulted because I had Mike Rossi on the show and he randomly brought up Senyaka. And I'm like, well, let's do Senyaka. So here we are a little while later talking this out. This is the third Acolyte episode that I've done. We've done the characters of Scanner and Amelia Vogt, and I'm fascinated by the wealth of character diversity on this team. Suvik Senyaka is a very different character than either of those. I'm so happy to be welcoming my friend Mike Rossi back to the show and my friend Derek Nichols to the show for the first time. It's so great to see you both. I've met you both in person. You are lovely. Let me have you introduce yourselves to our audience, and I would love to hear just some of your early thoughts on Senyaka. Like, I suppose, what were your character thoughts before you jumped into the research? Because when you read a character front to back like this, it's a whole exercise.
Hey, I am super happy to be here, especially like you said, this week. It's been nice to kind of be able to, the past couple of days I've just been headfirst into comic books to just be in that world for a little bit. So I'm grateful for that opportunity to do that. Yeah, so my pronouns are he, they. I'm based in Buffalo, New York. So I'm getting to see the seasons change right now, which is also kind of a beautiful thing to absorb. My Senyaka thoughts, I remember him in the background a lot when I started getting into X-Men. So of course I like the 90s cartoon was what brought me in. But I don't think I've ever told you this, Chad. I also was like a I'm a huge like true crime nerd too. So like I don't think I ever read the Necrotia like front to back, and I'm very excited to talk about like the possibilities of this character. So I'll just leave it at that.
Excellent, excellent. I made a documentary about true crime. If you haven't seen it, you should. It's a good one. Let me also welcome Mike Rossi back to the show. Hi, Mike. It's great to see you.
Yeah, thanks. It's good to see you too again. And Derek, nice to meet you. Yeah, my name is Mike. I'm a cartoonist and illustrator. My pronouns are he and him. Yeah, kind of the same. Senyaka was kind of always just kind of chilling there with the acolytes. I didn't realize until doing the research how like hardcore messed up he is. And actually, I think, which I'm sure we'll kind of talk about, like in Necrotia, that's really where his backstory kind of gets fleshed out a little bit more. And you kind of realize like this dude's not normal.
This is not a healthy person, y'all.
Yes. Yeah.
I want to open, Derek, you and I had a chance to hang out in person quite a bit at the Uncanny Experience. We'd been friends online for a long time. It was crazy fun to meet you in person and hang out with some of our mutual friends, Demanda and Scott and Scotty and Sarah. Like, we had a lovely, lovely weekend. I remember you telling, if you're willing to share with the audience a little bit, how kind of like finding this X-Men community in recent years has kind of taken you back home again. I'd love for you to share a little of your story if you're willing to.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So recently, especially like this podcast and like meeting people online. So, my life had changed a lot in the past couple of years, going through like, I was in a long-term relationship, had a divorce, and then like kind of a toxic relationship after that. And it has been great to find myself again through comic books because those kind of fell out of my life for a little bit because they didn't seem like a priority. But now, it's been great to kind of like focus in on me and what my values are and what my interests are and, how important especially the X-Men world has been to me and was to me. I'm really grateful to be back into the community. And I'm always happy to like meet new people and just want to nerd out over this stuff because it's like it's parallel to life, obviously, and just a coping mechanism. And this is my community.
Yeah, the community of storytellers, building a community through this show and meeting people in real life has been transformative for me in the last few years. And unless people know me personally well, I don't know that you can quite understand the impact of that. To like go to these cons and meet friends and like feel like understood and accepted and like you're with your people. I mean, I got a family and kids and friends here, but it's just not the same. It's such a lovely, lovely thing. Mike, I know you've had some of those experiences as you're traveling around promoting your book. Do you want to talk about community a little bit?
Yeah, I think that the sort of the comics community, the cartoonist community, I have found to be one of the most sort of generally accepting that I've encountered in my years, which is really nice. Like there's this sense that it doesn't really matter who you are, it doesn't really matter what you're into, even if you don't find somebody who has a product that you're interested in or is writing stories that you're interested in, no one really kind of like gives you a hard time or faults you for any of that, right? I think I've found in general people to be really sort of accepting, passionate, and excited. And that's, I think, difficult to find in a lot of other avenues. You know, people just accepting you for who you are. I mean, what a radical
I mean,
concept.
I'll speak for Derek here. There's a moment where you're dressed as Sebastian Shaw in the back row of a Sentinels class, sitting between Bastion and like Mr. Sinister or whatever. And I'm like, this is a good day, right?
And just like to connect this to like to connect the thoughts on community here, we see like the downside of what social media can be, but like it's also super powerful for the queer community too. You know, we didn't have these resources, at least in, you know, I'll speak for somebody my age, like I didn't have this network, be able to find this network back when I was a teenager or growing up. So I'm very grateful for the positives that social media and can bring to us.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful thing. Okay, lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I use he, him pronouns. So I grew up really imprinting on the character Cable. He was one as a teenager that I really, really delved into. And I got to interview Fabian Nicieza about this, and he made fun of me, which is delightful. But I'm like, Cable had this ultimate power, this ability to do anything, except he had this techno-organic virus that held it in check. And it was the perfect balance of the disease with the mutant power that would allow him to thrive. If one slightly edged out the other, things could become disastrous. And as a teen, I was wrestling with like a lot of family trauma and my own queerness in like a very conservative religion. And that balance to me gave me permission, I think, somehow to just kind of hold it all in check. It was an escape in a way. You know, the next episode coming out on the main show after this is the About Franklin Richards episode, The Trial. And I talk about this there too with Tom Brevoort and some other guests, because Franklin is another character with ultimate potential who has to hold it back. So Cable was a really important character for me. And my first memories of Senyaka prior to doing this research or this read-through was that run in Cable where he comes back and he's like the demon creepy life-sucking guy in the water with Lee Forrester running around. And that issue really imprinted on me, that three-issue arc. I found him really scary and kind of delightful. Then you realize he was a bit character until they did a little more with him. You know, this is a character that has a strong storyline, even though there's a few bit appearances along the way. Mike, do you want to talk to us about Senyaka's look? This is a very unique-looking character in a sea of complicated, mutants that can be a little repetitive. He's got that classic acolyte's uniform, but there's some things about him that are very distinctive.
Yeah, he has what's that, like the red and blue or red and purple color scheme of his partners there. But he's also got the head wrapping. I don't really know what else to call it, but you don't really ever see his face. And I don't think it's
We
until
literally have never seen his face.
yeah, in the Necrotia storyline, I think you see like the burning embers of his eyes in one or two panels. But like other than that, you have absolutely no idea if this guy even has the face. So really kind of covered up, sort of head to toe. And then his whips, they change a little bit from storyline to storyline. I think of that Lee Forrester one, they're kind of like spiky as opposed to just like coils, which I thought was kind of interesting. But he definitely is a menacing figure.
Yeah, so first of all, with his costume, he is covered. He's kind of an ebon black. His head looks just kind of like a, I don't know, like a thumb, right? Like it's just like an ebon thumb with like no facial markings on it. And he's got a wrap. The wrap kind of looks like a snow hat to me, using like an American reference. I do not know much about Sri Lankan culture or Sri Lankan head wraps, but they later tell us, he just goes by the name Senyaka for a while, but they later tell us his first name is Suvik. He's from Sri Lanka. I do not know if that implies anything about his religion or culture, but also he's a serial killer, so let's maybe not talk too much about that. Derek, tell us about the tentacles and how they connect to Senyaka's powers.
Going back to his look and the tentacles, there's also something very like Scorpion from Mortal Kombat about him,
Oh, sure.
especially.
I didn't make that reference, but sure.
Yeah, like I try to like I was also trying to think about like what's, you know, as that character has built through time, like what was going on and also pop culture and nerd culture. So Mortal Kombat kind of grew in that really the Lee Forrester issue. Like you're right, Mike. Like there was a spiky part to the tentacle. So he like drains life force through the tentacles. It seems the power changes a little bit, kind of in a way, throughout, depending on who the writer is. The tentacles themselves have this bright yellow glow consistently. And that's something that really stuck out with me in the Necrotia arc. Like visually, he was a very impactful character because it's sort of so dark in general. So he's one of the characters that really lit things up.
So the tentacles give me like a Man of War energy. Do you guys know those like jelly jellyfish creatures that like float on the top of the water, and they have like long creepy wires that kind of hang down, and if like a fish hits them, that'll like zap them and like stun them so that they can wrap up in the tentacle. Like kind of creepy in that way. They are part of his body, I'm relatively sure. I think that is the case. But we've seen them get like cut off and grow back. It might be some sort of appendage or a thing that regrows or gets attached or that he can take off and on. We kind of just don't know. And you are right, they are electric. So he can like zap you with them. If he does it right, although it's weird, he can kind of like pierce you with the point of one. But his primary power is to drain life, right? Which gives us the obvious connection to the more popular mutant character, Omega Red, who has very distinctively different kind of tendrily, his are yucky. His tentacles are gross, but they're kind of like withered vines, and like they wrap around you and drain their life, and he feeds off of it. He calls it the death spore virus. There doesn't seem to be any virus with Sanyaki. He doesn't infect you with anything. He just drains your life force. It's like a thing that he feeds on, but you kind of get the idea that he doesn't need to. He just wants to. Mike, do you have thoughts on the tentacles? Because they're the most distinctive part of this guy, and they're besides his like eraser head.
Right. Yeah, no, I think so. At first I thought they were sonic like constructs, that they didn't necessarily have like corporeal form kind of thing. Like they weren't necessarily solid until he used his sonic powers to sort of create them. But in progressive or subsequent storylines, that doesn't seem to necessarily be the case. But yeah, like it's one of those, I guess, kind of mysteries that will remain a mystery since he's not a super popular character. Like, where exactly are these tentacles? You know, when he's like just hanging out, having a beer after work, like, are they wrapped around his body? Do they not exist? Do they retract?
Do they pull back inside of himself? Yeah. So here's where a person who is writing the Marvel Comics handbooks, I did not write the Sanyaka article, by the way, but they have to read all the appearances and they have to write all the stuff and they have to answer all the questions. So I'm just going to read this off the Marvel Wiki. This is like the handbook, like style, like let's put it all together, read everything and make the powers make sense. Sanyaka was a mutant with the power to drain life force from other people upon physical contact. He seems to have full control over his power and can activate it at will and with different speed of absorption. When he needed to quickly restore his health, Sanyaka managed to turn a healthy adult man into dust in a matter of seconds. And secondary is regeneration and self-resurrection. He can absorb life force to heal himself, even when all of his bones and organs were shattered by Magneto and professional medics declared him dead, Sanyaka managed to completely recover after fully absorbing the life force of several people. Sanyaka had seemingly died on multiple occasions and mentioned that he was killed previously, but he always resurfaced with some time later, apart from his last decapitation so far, is what it says at the time that this was written. We'll get to that in a little while. So there's a, like a very horror villain thing, right? A very Freddy Krueger. You can kill him and he's going to come back energy. Then it says psionic whips. So think of it like a prehensile tail. Sanyaka can generate a pair of psionic whips that move according to his mental commands and could greatly increase the distance of his absorption power. He can use the whips to simply entangle and constrict victims, drag them closer to himself, or to strangle them. But the whips can also conduct his bioelectricity to ignite nerve clusters in an opponent to cause paralysis or intense pain, as well as sear into their flesh. We get those markings on Lee's neck, right, in that one story. In their energized form, the whips could also be used as a piercing weapon or to destroy electronic devices. However, if the whips are destroyed, it will backfire on him and temporarily shut down his brain. Lastly, life and death sensing. He's able to see life force of other beings and can also smell the death on others, can smell if that person has killed someone else. He was able to see through Celine's illusory disguise thanks to this. So we're kind of wrapping up as lots of thoughts about the different use, but they are physical. They can turn electric, but they call them psionic in that he can control them. And then kind of the main part of his power is the life force with the bioelectricity that he can like absorb or give. What are your thoughts? Does that answer the questions? Does that make sense?
Yeah, one of the biggest questions I had was like, are they prehensile? And I, because he does grab things with them, like in that Cable Deadpool issue. So yeah, that wasn't super clear.
Well, when they get cut, he screams, right? Like he can feel them. Mike, any thoughts here?
I mean, that makes about as much sense as anything else, I guess, in the Marvel universe. He is a fan of the chokehold, with his whips. He has a fondness for strangulation. So, I guess, yeah, sure,
He's
go
kinky.
for
He likes to he likes choking.
it.
If anyone wants to take this challenge, take a character you know really well, like Wolverine or Rogue or Jean Grey or even Cyclops, and write up a power section. Write up, here's how the powers work. Like you're writing an encyclopedia. It's a fucking hard thing to do, actually. The hardest challenge I ever had writing the Marvel handbooks was doing the character Claw, who's the guy that like turned himself into sound, because every time he appears, his powers work differently. And I had to write this like giant like summary of all the ways his power works and then like edit it down to something comprehensive. It's very challenging. The other thing we'll mention, and this is never stated on the page, but based on his name, Suvik, Suvik, that is a name of Sinhalese origin, which is an Indo-Aryan language to the Sinhalese people of Sri Lanka. So when they chose his name, they assigned it specifically to Sri Lanka. I do not know of any other Sri Lankan mutants that exist in Marvel Comics, although if you know of one, let me know. The name Suvik, if you translate it, means one with a speedy health, which is actually very clever. I do not know that Senyaka means anything besides soldier. So you kind of think of his name as like meaning healthy soldier or like regenerating soldier almost. And that's kind of a delightful nugget that you wouldn't know if you didn't look the names up.
It fits.
I think I saw something when I was trying to do that dive in a little bit, or you had it in your notes. I don't remember, but the meaning of the first name. And I mean, it's the kind of thing that if you take that extra step to figure out, the meaning behind something, it does, it just adds to the fun behind it. Like this character was well thought out. It wasn't just like his name is John Smith and he kills people. It's actually, even if though he doesn't have a lot of screen time per se, a lot of panel time, that there is a lot that could be done with him because somebody took the time or a team took the time to develop
I think it's
that.
fun when it's accidental, but I think a lot of writers choose names like this intentionally, but you just don't know it because, there's only so much room on the page. So brilliant. I just looked it up while we're talking. The only other Sri Lankan character at Marvel in history that we know of is Dr. Amara Perara. Dr. Doom got her pregnant once in a Brian Michael Bendis series. Like I think that's the only other character that we know of from this place. So no connection to Senyaka at all. The Acolytes are a blast. We'll just introduce them very briefly. This is a group of characters that during the 90s, when things were very divisive for a lot of groups, including queer people, this idea of like forming bands of people and kind of like fighting back, you don't get to hurt us anymore. So we have the X-Men, Xavier's Dream. We have groups like X-Force and X-Factor and the Mutant Liberation Front, and they all have completely different mission statements. The mission statement of the Acolytes is very specific. Derek, do you want to talk about what their goal is?
Oh, is it the goal of just, doing whatever Magneto, pushing Magneto's, doctrine forward? Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah, they gather under the guise of Magneto with the idea of here's a mutant nation, but also a mutant religion. We just saw this explored on Krakoa in a lot of stories, but like there's a Magneto is the savior. And then you get crazies like Exodus and Fabian Cortez who sneak in. There's a large group here. They're forming a mutant homeland. They end up on Avalon in the space station in the sky, which is like the fancier version of Asteroid M. And there's a group of different people with different purposes. Some of them want peaceful coexistence. Some of them just want to live away from humanity. Senyaka is one of those that wants to go kill humans. He wants to like get it, this is the angry queers with like machine guns and baseball bats like on the streets. Like, yeah, you just come at us and we'll teach you. But they're actually committing murders. So attacking innocent people to like raise awareness of themselves and their cause in the news. So some really complicated characters. Senyaka is teamed up with when we first meet him at Uncanny X-Men 300. Among the Acolytes, he's part of Lord Fabian Cortez's private guard, which is, well, that's a job, man. The white supremacist, like mutant in space, selects three people for his private guard. One is Senyaka, one is Spore, and the other is K2. Do you guys have thoughts on Spore and K2? Both deserving of their own Patreon episodes someday.
Yeah, I don't think either of them are as interesting as Senyaka. I mean, they're all very sort of distinct, I guess, which, is obvious, makes sense. But Senyaka is just, I mean, he's in a league of his own, compared to the other two, which I guess does not answer your question.
No, you're good. K2 is a guy who has like a thick beard, big dude. He's got one arm. We learn in a story in a flashback once that like Omega Red is involved in his past, and he can like affect satellites. Spore is more of like, what if Wolvesbane was a crotchety old Scottish man? He gets captured in a story and like held by Excalibur for a long time, and he's involved in the origin of Dr. Rory Campbell turning into Ahab. So these characters do have some life outside of this story. Senyaka's got a couple buddies, and they're all, I don't know, they've got their own thing. One of the famous storylines from the Acolytes, the most famous perhaps, is the trial of Neophyte. If we, get out of like the fall of Avalon or, some of those stories. Neophyte is a really interesting character who is approaching the Acolytes from a completely different perspective.
He's kind of like a, well, they refer to him sort of as a kid. I don't know if he's supposed to be like a teenager or whatever the case is. He can,
I'm getting like
he,
17 to 21-year-old vibes, right? He's the queer kid that left home and joined a group of older gays in space.
I think he, he does so right because he feels like he doesn't fit in. He's trying to, find his community, whatever the case is. And then as he sees what they're doing to Moira, he's kind of like, oh, this is not really like, I don't want to be mean to people. Like, I don't want to hurt anybody. So now I'm conflicted because I was taught to be nice to people. I don't want people to hurt me, but I don't want to hurt other people. And he finds himself in this position where the people in charge, Cortez and others, obviously do not feel the same. And he winds up sort of betraying them and helping the X-Men save Moira.
Neophyte is a really great character. I would love to write Neophyte in a team book. I don't want to write Senyaka. I mean, I could write Senyaka, that's fun too. But Neophyte's a character that I think has tremendous potential to be like on an X-Men team. Except he's just one more phasing guy, right? But he has a unique part. Like he phases into something and then kind of goes like super speed to the other end of the place that he wants to phase out of. So it's like a different version of phasing. It's kind of a fun thing. I think there's some really cool shit you could do with this kid. He's German, which is interesting. Derek, are you a Neophyte fan?
I just think he's interesting because, I mean, I think he's somebody a lot of people can relate to. He's just in over his head and he's trying to make a good decision. And I think we've all kind of had to face those trials. So I'm with you that he's interesting.
So Neophyte, again, let's picture him as the queer kid who's moved to the big city. He's trying to find a community. They bring him in. He says, I'll follow all the rules. But turns out it's kind of a cult. And there's a group of people who are like very mercenary. Again, it's the private guard. They have captured Moira MacTaggert here because there's a lot of shit going on. Okay. We recently reviewed Defenders 1516 on my show, old pre-giant size story where Magneto creates a guy named Alpha, the ultimate mutant, who in the end judges Magneto evil and reverts him to a baby. When Claremont later brings Magneto back, we get a retcon that Eric the Red, the guy from space, reverted Magneto to adulthood. But Claremont in 1991, in the new volume of X-Men, revealed that Moira MacTaggert had Magneto during the time when he was a baby, and that she kind of futzed with his DNA and his brain a little bit to try to make him less evil. So it's kind of a weird retcon that's explaining why Magneto was suddenly so friendly with Charles and like such a different character once Claremont took over. And I don't think Claremont liked that very much, but he did write it into the story. So now the Acolytes have captured Moira and they are like torturing her for information, basically. When you add all of the Krakoa, Moira's multiple lives, and now she's messing with the DNA of baby Magneto, we haven't really explored what that is, but wow.
That all hurt my head the first time I read it. So still don't have much thoughts. I'm glad it's in the past.
Man, I've got some story ideas there too. I think when you like delve into those little corners, Moira was in Magneto's brain once, and that's a really fascinating story platform that doesn't require a lot of explanation, Even post-resurrection Magneto, there's some really interesting ideas. Neophyte is very upset about them torturing someone, and he goes on the run, and Senyaka is one of the mutants that is sent after him. And while he's down there doing that, he drains the life of a woman because she helped Neophyte. So he ran away, found help from a woman who then they kill. And as she's dying, Neophyte just basically says, I don't even know your name. And I'm not going to do a Sri Lankan accent, folks, but Senyaka says, as you said, Neophyte, she was a human. Proof enough that Cortez was telling the truth. Neophyte says, why did you have to kill her? She did nothing to you. She was no threat to those of us with mutant abilities. By their very existence, Homo sapiens pose a threat to mutants everywhere. The one must reject the other. A neophyte gets an electric tentacle around the throat. It paralyzes him. It's called a psionic whip. Have you been away so long, child? You've already forgotten Magneto's lessons. Here's advice to you, Flatscan. Be more cautious of the strays you choose to adopt in your next life. You never know what company he'll bring with him. And then in runs Wolverine. So let's talk about Sanyaka. He's fully buying into the cult's message at the beginning and like very cruelly seeking to teach a lesson here. This guy has a cruel streak. We're going to later learn more about that, but not a nice person.
I mean, it pretty much sort of sets the table for the kind of character that, you know, we're dealing with. And even though in a lot of the issues and whatnot, like he doesn't necessarily have a lot of, I don't want to say presence. Like there aren't multiple panels, multiple pages devoted to Senyaka. But when he shows up, I think because maybe he had this sort of introduction, like I'm the extremist and this is what the deal is. He doesn't necessarily need any additional like backstory in those issues, in those panels when he pops up. Like he pretty much from chapter one states what he thinks the deal is. And he is, I don't know, I guess it's good. Like he's true to himself literally throughout. There's no wavering. So I guess you got to give him credit for that.
Then in comes Wolverine, adamantium claws out. He slices right through the psionic whip. And we get Senyaka, who has no mouth, by the way, that we know of. But he yells, Yarg!
I love how Wolverine plays like a doctor in this line. Whoops, guess severing your sonic whip caused enough feedback to temporarily fry your brain. How embarrassing.
And then Spore says,
Ye lousy traitor, Senyaka was a devoted follower of the cause. He have no right to be mocking the man while he's down. Old Spore will have you regretting what you did for me, what you did to me, friend.
You sure you don't want to try a Scottish accent?
I'm positive.
He was great.
So Senyaka in his first appearance is called Sanyaka, like S-A-N. It's later corrected to S-E-N. I'm not sure why the change, but it's fine. It's pretty close. In X-Factor 92, we get the story of Sanyaka with Javits, Spore, and the Kleinstock brothers. And they're attacking a hospital in Wan Trot, Virginia, where they're just deciding to kill some helpless patients and nurses just to prove a point. Derek, do you want to tell us about Javits?
Okay, which one was Javits again?
Yeah, Javis is the real big one.
Oh, see, that's more my type. honestly, I can't remember too much about him in this. I was just kind of like hooked. I was really processing why they were attacking a hospice, a ward building.
Yeah. Isaac Javits is a character that kind of looks like Strong Guy when he's all bulked up. Like massive torso. He wears like a headpiece, probably one of the least explored acolytes. And then we've got the Kleinstock brothers. Mike, do you want to tell us about them?
Yeah, they always confuse me a little bit because they're attached to each other. That's their thing, right? Like
Yeah.
they're conjoined twins, essentially.
There's a character who's a mutant named the Collective Man, who's like five quintuplet brothers who can all combine forms like Power Rangers style. They like meld into each other. It's multiple man in a way, but they all have distinct identities. And when they power up in that way, they increase his strength by like five times, right? Later, this guy like absorbs all the store like souls in China and like turns giant for a minute. The Kleinstocks is like three triplets. It's three brothers who are able to like meld into each other, but also like it bulks them up, but also they can kind of pop out of each other too. So like one might be facing one direction and the other's like head and arms can grow out the back of the other or like stack on his shoulders. They can change their like size. It's kind of a really like body horror, but these characters are super jokey in like the universe. One of the brothers dies and then there's like two left. I don't know. They're an interesting pairing. Excuse me. They're an interesting mutant power. Like those circuits where they like meld together is always fascinating to me.
Yeah, no, I mean that was more than I knew about them. So thank you for
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Kleinstock brother lesson.
I love doing a little bit of like thought about like how powers work and like what that does to psychology. That's always my favorite thing to like create a character from. When we get into the hospital where they are just there again to slaughter people, the Kleinstocks, who are in this case two of them sharing a body, yell, "Good afternoon, nurse. We are the Acolytes, and we're here to slaughter flat scans." And then they just start killing humans in the name of Magneto. They kill nurses. They kill patients on hospice. Senyaka wraps his tentacles around the throat of one nurse. Her name is Leslie Murray, and he burns scars into her flesh. Just so he can leave like an imprint. Here's the survivor we're going to allow to tell the story. You flatscans just don't get it, do you? You never get it. You deserve this and worse. But Spore ends up captured here. This is rough slaughter when you see like the most innocent getting attacked.
Trying to like piece it together, like I'm laughing and it's not funny, but I was thinking, well, maybe they're attacking like a hospice center because it's like a compassionate kill. Is that like as horrible as that sounds?
Nope,
But
there's
like,
another Acolyte story from this same era in Uncanny X-Men where they attack a school of
us.
kids with, or excuse me, a bus, there because there's a mutant kid that has Down syndrome and they think he's lesser than them and they're there to kill everyone. It's not great. I mean, but they're telling the same kind of story. Like, these are the people that will attack the most vulnerable among you.
And but that doesn't justify like what they did to the nurse and like the staff there. So it was super rough.
No, yeah, no, it's not okay. Even if you're at war, you don't attack the most innocent, right? That's what tells us these guys are villains.
It's like the classic asshole bully, right? Like you pick the weakest person. Instead of like taking on someone your own size or like hitting above your weight, you like go and show how big and tough you are by kicking someone who can't defend themselves
Yeah,
or who doesn't have the strength.
these are the characters that the X-Men are all having to go on news and say, like, not all mutants are like this, right? Not always an easy thing. Later, they attack, the Acolytes are sent to attack a government base where they are building Sentinels with Nimrod technology for Project Wide Awake. Valerie Cooper is here, so is Robert Kelly. We're not going to explain these characters, but they're human complex politicians. And there's a whole team of X-Factor here who are the mutants who are working for the government, right? The queers who are working for the straights, for the institution. Javits caves in the wall. Cortez is there. They want them to retrieve, quote, the son of Magneto, who is Quicksilver, of course. You want him, you got him. Courtesy of Senyaka. Frenzy is on the team, right? We got Joanna Cargill. She says, "You're all starting to sound like the Klein stocks. This isn't a game. We're not here to pump up our egos. The cause is about working together, self-sacrifice in the name of our Lord." Again, that religious devotion piece. Senyaka says, "Tell you what, Frenzy, you follow your path to salvation and let me follow mine," which is through what, Derek?
So knowing what we know about the character, like that's what I'm interested in exploring with him in general. Like maybe his salvation is killing people. Like that's part of his like his religious like tenets. So like I don't know, I have more thoughts on this as we move through his history and thinking there
He's
after
either an
reading
insane, psychotic,
that.
sociopathic mass murderer, which is likely, or his powers have made him that because he hungers for death, or he started at one place, and then when he becomes part of the Acolytes, he's now giving himself permission to inflict torture from a place of superiority, or it might be all three of those things, right? He might do it for survival because he's hungry and he sees people as lesser, as prey, where he's the predator. Do you want to tell us about Senyaka versus Random in this fight?
Senyaka kind of attacks Random. Random grabs the tentacle or it wraps around his arm or whatever. And I don't know much about Random in general, but he kind of shows his badass qualities because he's like, oh yeah, this should hurt. And like it does. But now I'm just going to shoot you in the face. And he just like more or less shoots Senyaka in the face, which that's like one of his death. I don't know if he dies or he's injured, but
No, he doesn't die in this one, I don't think. But yeah, this is like you grab Scorpion's whip, pull him up close, and then smack him in
And
the
then
face,
just
right?
like
It's
that.
a rad move. Random is a teenage mutant who is like made of like pliable, super-powered putty. It's an odd, he's Play-Doh. And he morphs himself into this big, muscly mercenary guy. He can melt himself down into goo, but his main thing is like turning his arms into like various kinds of giant weapons that he can shoot things from. I don't love Random, but I did write the profile of that guy. He's another Patreon waiting to happen. We jump to the infamous Uncanny X-Men number 304, which is one of the saddest X-Men comics ever written. And there's a stack of these, which is the legacy virus is going around. Ilyana, who's a child, contracts it and dies. And this is the funeral, the infamous story where Colossus defects and goes with the Acolytes back to the space station. Do you have memories of this issue?
Yes and no. So I don't think I was reading it when it came out, but I am a huge Colossus fan. And one of the saddest issues that I can remember about Colossus is that Excalibur issue when he comes back and like starts beating on Pete Wisdom because he's with Kitty Pryde. And I felt so sorry for him because of what he's gone through and the trauma and he's trying to like figure himself out again. Then I went back and read all this and then I could see like put like the trauma of why he defected and like his thought process together. So it was again enlightening on his the sympathy I have for him and how he reacted in that way. I could connect with it and relate to it a lot. It's kind of like shutting down in a way.
Like Colossus is usually sort of described as like the heart of the team, or at least during certain periods of X-Men history and whatnot, and even sort of leading up to Ileana's death and the funeral, like you see him struggling with the fact that he can't do anything to help her. And obviously, like loss sucks, dying of an illness sucks, when a child is dying, it sucks. But to watch this character have to kind of go through that when all he wants to do is, protect her, save her. He's already lost his, the rest of his family. Like, it's such an unbelievable thing in general. It's unbelievable for Colossus to sort of abandon the X-Men, but in those panels, in those pages, like you get it, right? Like he's completely shattered and broken, and it's handled, I think, in a really they handled it really great for a comic book that's 32 pages long and however many issues. Like I think they, that whole fleshing out of Colossus, I think, is one of the coolest things in X-Men comics.
So to expand out for just a minute, Magneto was a villain. He made a baby, brought back, and then he was like an ally with the X-Men for a long time, right? He had the trial. He's like getting along with humans. He joins the Hellfire Club. Early 90s is there's the we order him now to be a supervillain again. He's learned Moira messed with his brain, and now he's formed the Acolytes. It's mutant society, and he's really like making bold moves. But he's surrounded himself with a bunch of sycophants and people with their own agendas, which is a weird and uncomfortable parallel to the Trump cabinet from 2016, and we don't know what's about to happen.
Forgot
Magneto's
about that for a
right-hand
minute. Thank you, Chad.
men, Magneto's right-hand men are Fabian Cortez, who is a colonial descendant of like the land grabbers who stole all the land. He sees himself as a white man, as like better than anyone else. His power is to like boost you up. And then we've got Exodus, who was like from the Spanish Inquisition like era. He's like an old French, like, I am dedicated to the Bible at all costs and will go on crusades for it. And he draws strength from religious belief, and he believes Magneto to be the Messiah. So there's some crazy people. Everybody on the Acolytes has their own reasons. So this is the story where Magneto storms the funeral of Ileana Rasputin, which, if you're writing a TV show, this is a brilliant moment, right? And there's no fight really between the teams. Magneto just kind of freezes everyone in place by seizing energy from the iron in their blood, which cannot be easy to do with a bunch of mutant characters who are super strong while resisting telepathy, at all of the other things going on. He holds them all in place, and after Senyaka says, praise be to Magneto, his word is our law, Magneto holds them all in place. He rips Xavier's wheelchair apart, and then he gives a speech. There is no need for you to attack, X-Men, for I did not come to engage you in battle. Rather, I have come to help you, to help all mutants. But in order to do this, I must demand total loyalty from those who count themselves among my followers. Senyaka, isn't it? Senyaka bows before Magneto. Yes, my lord, words cannot express the joy which swells my heart to overflowing, seeing you still walk in our midst. I only hope you will continue to allow me to serve you as I have in your absence. I want to ask you in a moment, is this sincere from Senyaka, or is it a front? Quicksilver then chimes in. You did much more than serve, Acolyte. You engaged in the genetic cleansing of dozens of innocent people, sick and dying humans who are of no threat to anyone. And these acts were committed in your name, Father. You are ultimately responsible for the heinous crimes. Magneto raises Senyaka in the air, wraps his own electric coils around him. The energy field drips yellow. Crimes, my son? Is it a crime to put an animal out of its misery? What you witnessed was the tossing of the gauntlet, the first sign of mutants taking initiative to free themselves from the humans' oppression at last. Had I not been in the Antarctic gathering my strength, renewing myself in body and soul, so he was like sitting in a hot tub in the North Pole through all this, get a massage. I would have given my acolytes my blessing, but I did not. And while your zeal is admirable, Senyaka, order must ever be maintained. When the rivers of this planet roar with the blood of humans, when the earth opens to swallow whole all those who oppose me, all this will be done on my word and mine alone, the word of Magneto. And the coils wrap tighter around Senyaka. Jubilee is watching, and it always cracks me up when Jubilee is like, ew, gross, at something like really awful. Senyaka gets pulped. He gets squeezed into organs and like splorches down onto the ground. Jubilee goes, "He like pulped the guy with his own coils. We're talking 4-star grossness." And Magneto says, "Do not weep for this pathetic man. I have not slain him. Rather, he has been liberated from the enslavement that was his life. Trust one who has died and risen again. Death has a way of putting everything into perspective." Senyaka's like tentacle raises one more time, and then it just kind of withers away, like the Wicked Witch's shoes and the Wizard of Oz just like curls up. And then Magneto reveals his home base of Avalon, Colossus joins him, etc. So that's the Senyaka story here. This is a big, crazy moment. What are your thoughts, Mike and then Derek?
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance, like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
So I don't think the first few times I've read that, or actually until you just mentioned it, I don't think that Senyaka was kind of blowing smoke up his ass. Like, I think he really was kind of just like, all in, you're the guy, etc.
He's like, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, he noticed me, he's talking to me, oh fuck, oh fuck.
Yeah, kind of, yeah, starstruck. What Magneto does to him is so, it's so interesting in a way. Like, yeah, I don't really care that this is what he did. I just care that he didn't wait for me to tell him to do it. Like, kind of just that ultimate sort of power trip. And certainly buying into the idea that he is their messiah, he is their savior. I say jump, you say how high, kind of thing. I don't know how many times Magneto kills somebody like this. He did something like that to Cannonball in the Age of Apocalypse storyline, I think, didn't he? Like, he more or less like trapped him and slowly crushed him to death too, kind of. Like, it's one of those times where Magneto is just kind of like, fuck you, you know, I am going to just like destroy you, and it doesn't, like, I am better than you, I am going to crush the life out of you, and end of story. And it just, yeah, 4-star grossness, Chad. 4-star grossness.
In some ways, if we use the like dictator mentality, this is Hitler coming to power, and he used all these people and gave them orders. But now that he's up there to prove like how strong he is in front of the armies that he's now in charge of, he points the gun at the one soldier, says, "This is what happens if you disagree," and then he kills that desirable. Like, this is a Game of Thrones storyline, right? Like, but it's uncomfortable when we draw the Trump comparison, which we're just not going to do today. Derek, what are your thoughts on this story?
Yeah, so again, I think he was being sincere about like the serving part. That's, again, a discussion I'm excited to have a little bit later on when we talk about Selene and Necrosha. But what went through my mind is, yeah, that was insane what happened on the page. But Magneto even says, trust one who has died and risen. Knowing what we know about Senyaka and that he can come back from the dead, is there a possibility that Magneto knew that and that's the perfect person to make an example out of in front of everybody?
I was just going to draw that point.
Maybe that, like, giving a little bit of grace. I don't know, to Magneto, just, you know, maybe he just knew that it's his power set and like he's going to just make this point. Because what else were the acolytes supposed to do while he was in his like hot tub? Like, of course they're doing shit. So
this is Magneto flexing. He certainly did not warn Senyaka in advance that that's what he was doing, but this may have simply been that. I can use this, prove a point to the X-Men, put everybody in their place, and he's not going to die. But we do get dramatic scenes like this where Magneto will kill either to prove a point or to get revenge on someone who's truly heinous. This reminds me of the scene, if you guys have ever read Thunderbolts, Fabian Nicieza, we talked about this when I interviewed Fabian, has that scene where Graviton, there's that like new character in armor that's like Iron Man style, and Graviton just like collapses the armor in on itself, and like the body's crushed in, and it's like splorched, like it's like a crushed can at the end. You're like, ooh.
That actually blew my mind when I read it. They were just slaughtering everybody in the coolest way. That sounds traumatic too. In the coolest ways, though. So,
Level 4 grossness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That takes me back to like that scene when Archangel beheads Kamikaze and like it like rolls past Boom Boom and she's like, yeah. Okay, Mike, tell us about cable 11 and 12, if you would.
So Senyaka decides that he's a little bit butthurt about Magneto killing him. And in order to sort of feel better, he wants to now like kill Magneto's friends, family, whoever Magneto touched in the past kind of thing. And Magneto and Lee had a fling. Lee can't believe that Magneto's like this terrible guy and is sort of in denial about that. But Senyaka kind of slowly, she's like the captain of a ship, a boat, and he slowly kills her crew essentially to like rejuvenate himself and get stronger and get stronger. And then he kind of is like toying with her. She shoots him with a flare gun to sort of escape. A Cable jumps in and saves her towards the end of that.
One of the guys he kills here is a guy named Paolo. For those of you that listen to my main show, we did a script reading of a Lee Forrester story from X-Men Unlimited where Bloodscream was in it. And Paolo is the guy that's like, Bloodscream's coming to get us. And he hides like under a pile of fish in the ship so that no one will kill him. So here's a few months later and he gets eaten by Senyaka. Like, poor guy. Yeah, Lee Forrester is the girl, I think the only person in the world who has fucked both Cyclops and Magneto, which, you know, go girl, like you have a type. Hear from it. This is very horror story. This is very Freddy Krueger under the water, grabbing your ankle and people start disappearing, right? We see him say things like, so good. With each one, I grow stronger and stronger. Soon, I will be whole again. And when that comes to pass, I will take pleasure in rending your flesh only later at a time, dear Captain. So he's watching them. He's taunting them. There's like the ghost voice. Oh, Captain, my captain, it's your duty to go down with your ship. Just one last embrace before you go. Tisk, tisk, to abandon ship is an act of mutiny, dear captain, and mutiny is a hanging offense. The court finds you guilty on that count, in addition to one count of conspiring with the enemy. For these heinous crimes, you are hereby sentenced to a slow and painful death, courtesy of this vessel's new admiral, me. She hits him with a flare gun. You are proving as hard to kill as myself, he says once. And yeah, he's only there to kill her because she dated Magneto one time. This is where we get Senyaka's explanation. We get some insight into his powers. I was very near death. The false god, Magneto, shattered every bone in my body and most of my organs as well. I was taken to a SHIELD medical unit where I was pronounced dead, but one of their highly trained physicians made the stupid mistake of touching me. I immediately took advantage of the situation and siphoned the good doctor's psionic energy. It wasn't enough to sustain me long, but when the two SHIELD security agents burst into the room to attend to the fallen doctor, I was able to ambush them and add their energies to my nearly depleted stores. So there's a fight in the Everglades. Cable gets a great line. Taste this, you decayed mass of putrid flesh. Dialogue is crazy. He wants to just grab people and drain their life to get revenge. But they've recognized him. Cable has studied, and Senyaka has studied Cable as well. As acolytes, we studied you, Cable. We studied all his enemies, their strengths and weaknesses. And you know what I learned? That without your weapons, your big guns, you are nothing. You deserve this, Jenna Trash Cable, a mutant lover and a mutant in name only. And we forget Cable's a telepath, impales, or telekinetic. I mean, he impales Senyaka with a bunch of sticks and they just leave him in the swamp. Very horror story, right? Like, this is a good two issues.
When I first read it, I'm thinking about everybody who has ever been in Magneto's life, like, why her? But then it makes sense because it's kind of an easy target for what Senyaka needs to do, like reabsorb energy and all that. She's got a crew of just humans, so.
Well, right, but Magneto fucked a human. He's
Yeah, that too. But I also like, yeah, it's the horror aspect of all of this is where I think the character really like, kind of like, thrives. And it's interesting to see him kind of lean into that. I also noted like in these issues, there are, again, I don't know what was going on in like late 90s, 2000s-ish, but a lot of tentacle use. Like Omega Red was like made an appearance, and then Cable was moving like soil that looked like tentacles too. There's a lot of that kind of vibe in the comic.
So, I guess for all of our listeners, if your kink is tentacle porn, you know, exactly. There you go.
It is very horror story too. Like, yeah, so Cable impales him with all these sticks, and then they, like, literally, he just said sort of how he came back to life, and they're just like, all right, like, peace out. We'll just leave you here in the middle of the Everglades. Like, come on, guys.
People are not good at like cleaning up their messes. So we also get the vibe. I don't know if Senyaka has died before this, but he has a relationship with death, right? He likes to kill. If he dies, he comes back. He drains life. Again, I think he sees humans as prey. I think that's a big part of his psychology. So he rejoins the Acolytes. This is the crazy Quicksilver Heroes for Hire crossover. I've mentioned this on my show famously. This is one of the stories I least like to revisit, but since there's so many characters, I keep reading it again and again. This is where Exodus is leading the Acolytes. There's a bunch of new characters. One of my all-time favorite characters, who for no reason is the character Gargoyle. I've literally written a team book featuring Gargoyle that no one will ever read but me. It's just in my pile of scripts. But Senyaka is part of this group where they are trying to steal Isotope E from the High Evolutionary on Mount Wundagor so that they can use it for powers. They fight heroes, they fight mutants, they fight evolved animals, and they force mutants who have the legacy virus to work for them so that they promise them a cure. If they do, but they don't have a cure. Feral is here. It's fine. Do you guys have any thoughts on what it was like to visit this crazy story?
You said it all. It's just a lot of characters. Hard to figure out who's fighting for who and for what.
Yeah, there's really not a lot to do for any of the characters here. It's just a crazy, weird X-Men tangential story.
Yeah, for sure. My least favorite of the research comics.
I've had to read this so many times, and I like the writers, but it's not my favorite. Okay, then we have Senyaka showing up a few places in like Magneto War. So he's back working for Magneto again. There's characters running around called the Renegade Acolytes of Magneto. Then he takes over Genosha, and like there are some rebel forces who are employing renegades to like fight against Magneto, who just took over the country. And Senyaka joins a fight against Magneto's allies. Maybe he doesn't like the idea that Magneto's like working with the humans, like he's like allying with the United Nations or whatever. A Frenzy Scanner, Pipeliner here, Fabian Cortez is boosting them up. It's fine. Not a lot for Senyaka here as well, except to just kind of analyze his relationship with the Acolytes. He's willing to follow Exodus. He's willing to follow Magneto or fight Magneto as that sees fit.
This might be controversial. Senyaka aside, this is one of my favorite Avengers eras. So I was excited to have them come into play here for a little bit. I just really like the lineup a little.
This is Busiek's like late 90s Avengers. I love this group. Yeah. In Cable Deadpool 42, Senyaka is wearing some tech enhancements. He's got a harness and a belt. Cable formed a mutant nation for a little while. Not a mutant nation, a nation for like refugees. He's kind of trying to show the world, like, if I put my mind to it, here's what I'm capable of, like messiah energy. It's called Providence. Cable and Deadpool are there. They're connected because their DNA got scrambled. So every time Deadpool body slides, Cable goes with him. There's some really funny stuff in this book. It's another Fabian EC as a classic. They're fighting. Deadpool yells at Senyaka, "Hey, it's Senyaka from Sri Lanka, former acolyte with energy-based whips. What the heck are you doing here? You got the bestest whips ever. You probably knew that, huh?" He calls him a Senyaka Davidoo at one point. Senyaka knocks him out a window and yells, "Will you shut up? And please, by the grace of my former glory, Lord Magneto, please let him be dead." Then Deadpool hits Senyaka in the head with a lamppost. Senyaka burns him. Deadpool gets a knife to the back. Senyaka strangles him. Deadpool teleports away. Crazy fight, really fun.
I enjoyed that fight. I think it's also like the longest Senyaka is like on the page. I mean, Deadpool is always just kind of fun. It was interesting to see Senyaka sort of dragged into that sort of confrontation. You know, like he doesn't have time to spout the religious sort of piety and whatnot, like, because Deadpool just is making fun of him the whole time. So he gets frustrated. It's fun to see Senyaka frustrated.
Yeah, for sure. The fight itself was just super fun to watch and go through. It was cool to just see him use some his powers in certain ways too, like grabbing that little statue and whatnot.
Again, very Scorpion. I'm glad you made that parallel for me. I hadn't crossed my mind. If I never have to say the phrase Senyaka Dabadoo again, I will be just fine. But you know, Deadpool, we love you for it. That's okay. Then we have Necrotia. It is the late 20-aughts. This is a fantastic storyline that draws upon all over X-Men history. Derek, tell us about Necrotia.
So Selene is trying to get to godhood and has like this craft of like I guess the ultimate goal is to absorb souls of, is it specifically mutants without it? Like there, or is it, can it be anybody? Like she resurrects a lot
Ooh,
of people.
okay, I'll cover this very quickly. Selene is an immortal ancient mutant, thousands of years old, who has a bunch of superpowers. She's one of those like Monet who just has like five or six different power sets. One of them is the ability to drain the life of victims, which extends her own life and makes her young. But she carries the memories of the people that she eats, like people are food to her. She carries the memories of them with her. There's a tie-in in Necrotia where there's a blade connected to her past that if she uses the blade in a particular way and has enough energy, it will ascend her to godhood. We've seen this revisited a few times in other comics because Selene is also one of the external. Who's like a high, not, it's not a hive mind, but it's a specific group of mutants born across different times and centuries that are connected. If I summon the externals, they all have to come. I know where they are all the time. And if one external kills another external, they draw their power and like make them bigger. So if you guys have read the most recent run in Krakoa, there's that Dominion storyline where I'm trying to kill billions and billions of souls across different timelines to ascend to godhood, basically, right? And that's the Essex storyline as the Dominion called Enigma. Selene kind of has that. There's a thing where if I use the right tools and absorb the right a number of minds, it will ascend me into external godhood. This story seems slightly separate from the standard external story in that, and again, if you read the X-Men Unlimited externals arc recently, we see Selene like grow to the size of a blood god. It's really gross. But in this specific one, it's connected to this mystic blade that if she uses it after absorbing enough souls, it will ascend her to godhood. And she's gathering a cult of death-worshipping mutants around her to serve as her emissaries. That's the basic premise behind Genosha. I thought that would be fast. I'm sorry. That was really long. Derek, continue.
Yeah, so she starts resurrecting some of like fan favorite characters, which is great to see. And then also, well, so maybe a little cart before the horse. When she brings together like this team of death cult mutants, Sanyaka's part of that, but she also brings back Blink, which is amazing because I don't think we've seen Blink. I think the Exiles was happening at this time too, where the Age of Apocalypse Blink was bouncing around. But in the main universe, we haven't seen her in a while. And then
She
Dazzler's.
died in the Phalanx Covenants. Like, we
Right.
haven't seen her at all.
Right. So she pieced her back together, and then Dazzler's sister Lois.
Mortis. I have a Patreon out there on Mortis.
Tanyanka, Wither, and then Elias Bard. So they all, it's really cool to have like this assemblage of people who just want to kill or have powers just to kill that are destructive. And she's kind of like bringing them together, like having them realize it's not a bad thing. And Tanyanka's only one of the few who is already on board. Like as soon as she approaches him, he's like, knock, shut up, I'm ready, let's do it. So Tanyanka says he's killed for Sinister. When did that happen?
We
That,
don't
do we
know.
see
That's not a storyline we've seen, but he does mention that in this
Right.
storyline. So he's like
Okay.
worked as an assassin for Sinister before, which just makes him just even scarier.
Yeah.
What do you think Senyaka's relationship to Selene is? Is this a new gig? Because it doesn't seem the same. Like Magneto was the Messiah, right? He's been a mercenary. But for Selene, it almost seems like recognizes like. I'm a death mutant. She is the death mutant. Like she is my goddess. I belong here almost energy.
He's made mention before, like, with Magneto and apparently Sinister, like almost always having to need some sort of permission to do this, but I think he's excited with Selena. It is, I think, a like versus like. And I think she is probably just like the buddy you like to get validation of what you're doing, right? She's like, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, you have permission. This is who you are. Go ahead and do it. And I think it's probably what he ultimately needed to fully dive. Like he's, of course, he's a psychopath and he's been murdering for years at this point, but I think he's always needed that approval in a way. And I think she gives that to him.
And Mike, did you have thoughts there?
I sort of agree with all of that. He doesn't seem to necessarily need to work with the same devoutness. It's just because, like, she would never crush him for killing a bunch of people in a hospital, because according to her, that's what he's made for. Like, that's what he wants to do. So go and do it. So,
Yeah, you're a lion killing sheep. It's fine.
he would follow her, to quote unquote hell and back, because she just gives him the sort of the confirmation that he's right. Like he feels he's right. Humans are sheep. or he can kill whoever he wants. And she's kind of like, yeah, that is absolutely correct. So,
and I think each of these,
like, the ultimate leader.
Yeah, I think each of these characters on her team have different motivations for being there. I think he is just embracing what he is, which is a conduit to death. Right? Like, there's that interesting vibe. Blink seems to be like the young teen that she's brainwashing a bit. Wither has always had a dark side, right? He was part of the new X-Men and he's ashamed of his powers. Here's the one place he can, like, let himself be himself. Whereas, Mortis is the brunette sister of Dazzler who hates her blonde older sister. that's her whole motivation. But if you read Mortis's history, she also kills people with a touch. And so her inclusion here was delightful. Necrosha is basically these people being gathered and sent out on various missions. We get a box that tells us that Sanyaka kills, quote, via life-draining psionic whips. They're in, like, black uniforms. And Celine has this complex thing. We have 16 million dead mutants on Genosha. If I can get a variant of the techno-organic virus, which is the human-altered version of the transmode virus. The transmode virus is an alien thing where you're, like, a machine that, like, spreads over something, converts it into food, and then absorbs the life or food. The humans have, like, changed that into the TO virus, which has a bunch of things. Think of it like a Venom symbiote. Like, there's certain rules around what this looks like. It's connected to the Phalanx. There's a bunch of these characters. Warlock is absolutely here. So she's using mysticism, altering the techno-organic virus, using that to raise the 16 million mutants on Genosha. So we get a bunch of old characters who are back from the dead that we haven't seen in so many years. And then she wants to feed on that, kill the 16 million mutants, and ascend to godhood, which she does get to do before, you know, the David and Goliath story where Warpath gets to put the knife in her chest that's connected to his mystic people. Fantastic fucking story. It's great. Sanyaka gets a couple cool moments in this, but overall with Necrosha, did you guys have any people you're like, oh yeah, I get to see this character? Was there any, like, major surprises for you? I remember Berserker from, like, X-Factor, early X-Factor has a full page. I'm like, yay!
Blink is one of my favorite characters, so it was cool. I mean, I know she's on sort of the bad side of it, but it was cool to have her come back. But I think that panel reveal with Banshee's just always kind of been a fun character too, so to see him sort of pop up. But then that idea, like, they're all actually some of them are trying to fight against sort of Celine's influence, and you sort of see that conflict, I think, in Banshee, that I think helps to sort of hammer it home that they're not all just kind of blindly doing this, but it raises the stakes a little bit too, because, you know, part of who they are is still in there trying to fight back, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I can never get enough of the Hellions, and especially Taro. Like, when she played the death card, like, that was fantastic. And I, like, you know, honestly, it was kind of like an emotional scene too, to see Emma react to seeing them again. Like, I think this might have been one of the first times she's had a deal with that after their death. So, you know, she was kind of, Emma was kind of shocked for a bit and just traumatized. So they all had to kind of, like, rally around her. You saw, like, a vulnerability that we all know Emma Frost has, but doesn't let anybody really see. So I think that was a really powerful moment when they first appeared.
It would be a dream for me to work in a book like this. But during this event, these lesser known characters all get kind of an origin story. There's a book called Ex Necrosha, The Gathering, which it's like different teams of writers and artists getting to tell little short stories about these, like, characters like Mortis and Blink. Mike, do you want to tell us about Suvik's backstory here? Leonardo Manco art. It's gorgeous.
This was a cool one. This is, I think, I like I said in the beginning, kind of where you essentially get all that you need to know about him. So Celine sort of has to manipulate pretty much all of her inner circle into kind of signing up. And she starts the process with Sanyaka similarly. She appears to him as a little kid, kind of saying, like, oh, I can't find my father, blah, blah, blah. And he's just kind of like, cut the shit. I know who you are. Like, I'm going to kill people. If you want me to kill people, great. Like, let's get started. Like, there is no need for you to try to manipulate me. I am ready to go. I've been waiting for this. Let's do it. And he's, right, like, one of the only followers that, yeah, he doesn't need to be manipulated because, like I said, this is what he wants and she's into it. So
a lot of the other scenes are like Celine, like, here, go ahead and murder this person. Doesn't that feel good? Now come rest your head in my breast. Come to mommy. Like, there's a lot of that energy. There's a story here where we get some flashbacks to a reference that he was a serial killer in Sri Lanka. The caption boxes say, even as a child, he knew his purpose. He saw the life within people and wanted to take it away from them, to leave their bodies bloody, broken, drained. And this is where Celine poses as a child. And Senyaka's living in a cave, red robes, black chains around his wrists and his waist. He's got bloody meat slabs hanging. There's a bloody knife in his hand. This is like full on fucking scary scarecrow level supervillain. Go back and see my scarecrow episode with Clay McLeod Chapman, where we talk about him murdering people with pitchforks and hanging them as wallpaper in his house. One of my favorite moments on the show, Clay McLeod Chapman's like, look at Scarecrow living his best life. And he's made his own home. He's got corpse wallpaper. What is happening? It's very bad. He recognizes who Celine is then. He says, I can smell it on you. If you wish me to kill for you, I will. You need not trick me or convince me. I will kill for you. I've killed for Magneto, for Exodus, for Sinister. But you are different. I can smell the death on you and I like it. She changes into Celine, my queen. Who would you like me to kill? And she says, everyone. Fantastic. It's so fucking good.
Beautifully, it's short, sweet, and like to the point. You again, it's like the true crime buff. Like, I loved it, but I also like that's the question. Like again, more if we had more of his backstory, why did she come to him as a little kid? And, like talk about the father. Maybe there's something with his father there that she was trying to resonate with. So I think there's definitely an opportunity to explore all of that, which could be exciting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. This adds so much meat to this character. There's a really infamous to me, X-Force 23. They're on the island and like just some random mutants are living in Utopia. It's the 198 era. There's not a lot of mutants left and a bunch of characters that are just wallpaper at this point. Like they're just background die. One of the most tragic is Diamond Lil. Like Mortis touches her head and she just lands with a thud on the ground. Senyaka gets to kill a guy named Meld, who was the little green mutant from Sentinel Squad 1. He gets to like manipulate machines around him. He kind of looks like Leech, but he's like a veteran who like piloted a suit of armor. Meld, everybody, go back and see my John Layman episode. We talk about Meld for a minute. And he chokes Archangel once, and then he gets impaled by Wolverine's claws and says, do you think I have not been killed before, little man? I have. He gets to wrap Warpath in whips. Struggle X, man. It makes it all the sweeter. And it finally wraps up. She like ascends to godhood, and she dies very quickly. There's a battle with X-Force where Wolverine cuts Senyaka's head off. And that is the fucking end for this guy.
No, like again, I think he was sort of the perfect character to be involved in a story like this, because it just, you know, it's right up his alley. It's in his wheelhouse. So it was great to have him in there. This current like death that he encounters, like also kind of very, very fitting, I think, for a character like that, with this idea like, oh, like maybe he's dead for real this time because he doesn't have a head anymore. But like he'll come back, because how could he not, right?
Yeah, yeah. He'll like choke out some hippos or some deer or some alligators, and then suddenly he's back to life again. There's a thousand versions of this guy.
Exactly. But no, it just this could have been a story if, you know, if Marvel decided, you know what, we want to take this like B-list character and make a whole thing about him. Like he could have been the Celine of this story, essentially. Like this is what he was made to do. So it was perfect use of the character.
I just, who would have thought, like reading X-Men 300, like this is what this character is going to ultimately become. Like there's no sign, really not much of a sign that this is where his path was. So it was kind of exciting to see him used in this sort of way and to have more, just to unlock more of that potential. Like when you read all of his, like his power set at the beginning of this episode, Chad, like there's a lot there. There's a lot to play with. And I think he finally got to flourish a little bit at the end here. So
I do not think this character has a lot of depth. I think he's a very simple-minded, kind of single-purpose creature, right? He found some home, but that doesn't mean he couldn't be taught morals or values or ethics, but I also don't think he could. I think he's a kid that was born to kill, right? So unless you have a character kind of telepathically influence him and like increase his compassion, he doesn't seem to, I mean, he's very sociopathic, but that may be directly related to what his powers are. He has to feed on something. Rogue keeps the gloves on, right? She doesn't want to use her powers, but he enjoys taking the life of what he sees as prey, which is why Celine makes him feel so seen. He's also a character that's very much the bullet in the gun, right? The character, he finds a leader and you point him in the right direction and he'll do as he's told as long as he's allowed to be cruel. I think there's a lot to explore with this guy. We haven't seen his face very clearly. There's some things about his relationship with death. He's not a character that really has relationships with other people either. Magneto crushed him. He's fought some people and got beheaded one time. And like, we have seen him very briefly when there's that time travel story in Marauders, but that's back before he died. So since since his beheading, there's been nothing for this guy. What are your thoughts on what you need to know about Senyaka, or what's the type of Senyaka story you would both like to see? And then we will wrap up.
You know, I think to a certain extent, he makes for a really great villain because he's sort of been just portrayed as one-dimensional. Right? Like you don't necessarily need to know like why he's bad. Like you just know he's bad, right? There's no gray area with him. So you can have just like sort of that classic, you know, good guy fights bad guy. That could be fun. You know, it could be an interesting battle, whatever the case is. You're never really worried about like, oh, but like Senyaka's really good, or oh, like he was abused as a child, or oh, like,
yeah, no, he gets crushed or beheaded and you applaud.
Yeah, like there's no gray area. So in a lot of instances, at least in the situations in which we have seen him thus far, like, you know, when Senyaka shows up on the page, you know what he's going to try to do. And when he meets his end, or he gets shot in the face, or whatever the case is, like, it's fine. You don't have to feel guilty about that because he deserved it. I think what could be interesting if one were to dive into a little bit of his background, like, you know, the not necessarily, you know, a whole series where you're exploring him as a serial killer, but, you know, is he just that one-dimensional character? Or like you're saying, Chad, you know, did his power sort of drive him to become that type of person, of that type of character? And then that could add additional layers. So the next time he's shot in the face or beheaded, you could be like, oh, but, you know, when he was 15 years old, like, he helped the little old lady cross the street. Like, really, there's a good guy in there underneath all the death and killing and whatnot. But as it stands right now, all you need to know is, like, when he gets shot in the face, it's cool. You don't have to worry about it.
He's a character I don't need to see a redemption arc for at all. I love some of these. One of the characters I'm really fond of from the 90s is the guy Sack, who's that little plasma guy that, like, will, like, ooze himself into your body and take it over and, like, ooze himself back out, like, your nose and pores and shit. He's so stupid, and I fucking love him. He's, like, just goo-based. I love just a dumb villain that you want to kick their ass and you just cheer, you know?
So many thoughts. Like I said, true crime, but I would love to. You can go in many different directions for me. And you can tell me to shut up because I could ramble about this for a while. But like, I would love to see him as that serial killer, like ground level noir style, like, and have like X Factor investigations kind of hunting him down, like, really, like, he's killing off people. Into that, and really leaning into like the detective part of it. I could see him in the current X Factor with Granny Smythe, like, who's trying to die. I think that'd be a really good, like, buddy cop kind of dynamic there, or at least a good fight, right? Like, I wonder, we don't know much about that character yet, but it'd be great to see them kind of interact with each other, because he smells death and she can't die. So, and she's 87, so the visuals are pretty great. I would like to see him in a different costume. It's always some very similar, which maybe there's something there that I don't culturally that I'm not connecting with, but it would be cool to see him change up a little bit. And then my last, like, kind of vibe is, I think he could be a really good Storm villain. Because she has ethics in a different way, and he has ethics in it. Like, I feel like that could bring her into a much more grounded level too. Like, sometimes she gets really, well, especially in her current series, like, very, she's gonna be very celestial. I think it could do some bring him, like, into real life with it, having her to deal with a serial killer at, like, this psychopathic extent. So
he makes a great bit villain. You want to see his ass kicked. But here's the story I'd like to see, or I would love to fucking write. We go back and we tell, like, an Acolyte story. It's like a limited series exploring those early years of the Acolytes from their perspective. We get a little key backstory. You can do things in two lines of dialogue or caption boxes that change everything you know. But we take this rich cast of characters, Amelia Vogt, Neophyte, Scanner. We have madmen like Cortez and Exodus running around, and we give it some pathos, and we understand a little bit more about the politics and dynamics. That's almost the story I'd like to see more than anything about this guy. Necrosha was great. We don't have to revisit that one, but it's good. I love these conversations. My brain kind of spins all day after we have these. I don't know if you guys noticed that happening with you as well, but when you get to read from a character perspective and, like, have these conversations, we leave with a particular understanding, and it's always such a delight. Thank you for being my friends and for coming in and putting in the effort to do homework and record with me. We're going to put this out on November 27th on the Patreon channel. So I would love to hear any final thoughts from either of you, if you have any. And where can people find you both online? Is there anything you'd like to plug? Greymulgan Lane, as I referenced, we're going to put this out on Thanksgiving, but the About Franklin Richards episode, which I've already recorded, it's wonderful, will be out on the main show. My next Patreon episode after this is about a little known mutant character named Blind Faith. So watch for me, Ruth Ann Price, and and Charles A. Bush joining me. I bet you haven't even realized you've thought of this guy before, but it's going to be a really incredible conversation.
So again, my name is Mike Rossi. You can find me probably most easily on Instagram. My name there is illustrator.mike. I also have a Threadless page where I sell some merchandise with some of my art on it. That's illustratormike.threadless.com. I wrote and illustrated a graphic memoir that I'm trying to find a home for.
Called Branches. Mike's been on the show to talk about it. It's wonderful.
It's called Branches. Thank you, Chad. Yeah.
Excellent. And Derek.
Yeah. And I'm Derek Nichols. I'm just active on Instagram, really. I don't too much to plug. My Instagram is Derek J. Nichols. My day job, I work for university doing sustainability work. So I focus a lot on climate change and climate action. Always happy to connect about that. Or just like I said, I'm trying to find my community in this comic world. So feel free to like add me and just we can chat. And Chad, thank you for bringing me here for my first time, especially this week. It was really, it's helpful to kind of process some emotions. Maybe that's why I was super excited to talk about a psychopath today. So
it's fun to just hang with friends and make new friends. So I hope you guys follow each other. I can't wait to have you both back on another time. If you're delightful and enjoy coming on the show, I will invite you back again and again. So beware. Thank you everybody for listening. We will see you back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.